fresh fallen snow icing his cheek. Twitching, he clawed at the shock collar. Halbador sat up, aiming the transmitter at Evan, his finger depressing the button. When the explosion had thrown Evan across the vault, the bunched trash liner must have pulled free from beneath one of the contact points. Pain radiated, grinding through his collarbones, his ribs, the base of his skull. He forced himself to focus through the static dancing across his eyes, willing his body to move. A moment later, his legs listened, scissor-kicking him into a spin on the floor, one boot weakly striking Halbador's arm. It was enough to dislodge the transmitter from Halbador's grip. The jolt in Evan's neck subsided. Snowflakes blew across his face, no salve for the burn circling his throat. Somewhere through the clouds of dust and ash, he registered the dog's barks. They sounded louder. Louder was not good. Evan shoved himself onto all fours, crawling toward the AK-47, his knees and hands skidding on the snow-slick floorboards. Behind him he sensed Halbador rising, stumbling the opposite way after the fallen transmitter. Evan pulled himself forward with one hand, using the other to try to stuff the trash liner back into place. He had to put Halbador down and get after Renee. Evan got one hand on the AK when the shock hit. The pain was blinding, blurring his vision. He rolled onto his back, dragging the gun across his chest. Halbador strode toward him, pointing the transmitter. The first shock electrocuted Evan's fingers, knocking his hand off the collar. The stinging intensified, lancing through his gums, searing his eye sockets. Evan dug deep through the pain, trying to get his brain to speak to his hands and make them obey. He got them to clamp the gun. He could feel his mouth stretched joker-wide. His grip trembled, jogging the AK back and forth. Sweat drenched his face. Electricity crackled through his neck, a drum roll of needle points. But he didn't let go. Halbador quickened his step, rushing for Evan. Across the room, the Doberman spilled through the wreckage of the outer wall, sleek shadows coated with snow. Their heads oriented toward Evan, noses twitching, bat ears spiked. Evan told his hands to firm the weapon. He told his arms to raise it. The tip of the AK wagged back and forth. He willed it another inch upward as Halbador neared. The dog's claws scrabbled across the wet floor. Pain filled Evan's head, turning the air opaque. He tried to see through the soup, tried to aim at Halbador's growing shape. His hands vibrated around the stock, the trigger. Halbador yelled, leaping for Evan. Evan lanced bullets up his chest and tore the carotid right out of his neck. Halbador landed in a heap at Evan's feet, the transmitter skidding across the floor. The circle of flame around Evan's neck relented. He hauled in a screeching breath, tasting oxygen for the first time in what seemed like days. The Doberman surged across the bodies toward Evan. For a second he considered shooting them so he could rush after Renee. But they were dogs, and even bad dogs deserved the benefit of the doubt. He dropped the AK, lunged for the transmitter. One of the Dobermans latched onto the cuff of his jeans, whipping his head back and forth. Evan kicked at him, twisting to grab the transmitter. The second dog landed on his chest. Evan barely had time to get an arm under the slender chin. Jaws snapped inches from his face, flecks of saliva spattering him. Even through the icy draft, he felt the heat of the dog's breath. The first dog tore at his cuff, rattling the heel of his boot against the floor. The fangs brushed Evan's cheek. Holding off the jaws, he thumbed buttons on the transmitter blindly. At last he hit the red one, the shock collar unlatching from around his neck and sliding onto his chest. Mustering what strength he could, he hurled the dog off. Snatching the open shock collar at the hinge, he wielded it like a weapon, the contact points aimed outward. The dog gathered himself and leapt. Evan jammed the collar into the dog's open mouth and hit the shock button on the transmitter. The dog twisted in midair, a fish breaking water, its yelp carrying up to the high ceiling and bouncing down again. His paws barely touched the hardwood before he bolted out of the ballroom, galloping for the safety of the hall. Leaning forward, Evan jabbed the live collar to the top of the other dog's head, and the dog shot backward, releasing Evan's cuff. He considered Evan for a moment, teeth bared, head cocked, so Evan leaned forward and shocked him again. The dog bayed his confusion and took off, following the fresh paw prints out of the ballroom. Evan sat there for a moment, his elbows resting on his knees. He allowed himself two breaths. But there were still snipers in the hills, a guard in the watchtower, Candy McClure and Orphan M loose somewhere in the building, and Renee making his getaway. Evan stood up. He grabbed the AK first. One of the dead guards had a nice thick jacket, which Evan appropriated, along with the full magazine from his gun. Trudging over to the jumble of corpses by the kitchen, he plucked up the vial that had fallen from Renee's coat and regarded it in the light streaming through the back of the house. Somewhere, a helicopter started up, the sound of chopping rotors riding the breeze. Pocketing the vial and readying the Kalashnikov, Evan stumbled through the demolished rear wall into the bracing winter day. 55. Almost there. Big explosion and firefight downstairs. Hold him. Sounds like Fallujah down there. We have no weapons. Get some. Pin him down. Copy that. Need backup ASAP. I'm bringing all the backup you'll need. ETA? Almost there. Are we cleared for kill if necessary? There was a pause, the longest pause Candy could remember Van Sciver ever taking. At last, his text appeared. Yes. The helicopter had lifted off by the time Evan ran around the corner of the chalet. On aggressive tilt, it forged into the eddies of snow. He aimed the AK, but the body of the Hilo had already vanished into the white, its lights out of reach. Panting, he watched until they too disappeared. The guard in the watchtower was leaning over the railing, gazing at the wake of the helicopter through the scope of the rifle. Evan jogged up from the side, shouldering into the wooden supports and fired directly up. The snow blunted his view, but he heard the wet thump of impact, and a moment later the rifle plummeted down from the heavens, lodging in the snowbank in front of him. No dogs, no guards, no doctor, no David, no Dex. Just two snipers in the hills, and two orphans in the house. Evan stepped forward, snatched up the gun, and examined his haul. An AR-10 in 7.62, clearly a designated marksman rifle. Evan could get almost 700 meters from it, but given the snow, 500 would be pushing it. Not that he was complaining about the snow. Right now it was protecting him from the dedicated sniper rifles in the mountains. With a range up to 1,500 meters, they'd have a massive advantage once the air cleared. Which it looked to be doing right now, the billows lessening in intensity, the snowfall growing more sparse by the minute. A movement at the front door of the chalet hooked his attention, Candy and Orphan M spilling into view on the porch, their heads tilted up, locking on Evan. They regarded one another across the distance. He'd have no time to set up a shot on the rifle. They were beyond effective firing range of the AK-47, but Evan lifted it and gave them a greeting anyway. The rounds pulverized the stone porch, driving them back inside. They'd have to regroup, scavenge weapons from the wreckage of the ballroom. He'd better use the head start well. Slinging the AR-10 over a shoulder, he jammed a new mag into the AK and bolted for the tree cover of the south slope. The snow thinned before his eyes, the gleam of the afternoon sun cutting through the haze. At that instant, something lasered into the ground a few feet from his boots, the spray peppering the right side of his body. A moment later, a supersonic crack announced the shot. Evan cut sharply. With a quick glance, he registered a glint of reflected light past the bulge 2/3 up the mountain, a fine long-distance overwatch position. The sound of another shot rolled across the valley, but he'd heard no impact, the round having sailed wider than the previous one. He dove over a fallen log, skidding into the safe embrace of the densely packed tree trunks, and sat panting. He gave a moment of thanks for the South Sniper's mediocrity. The North Sniper would have tunneled a hole through Evan's ribcage. He stood up, took stock of the weapons, and sprinted into the pines. He had to take out the South Sniper and get over the brink before nightfall. Candy and M would be on his heels soon enough. Rather than cut directly upslope as the sniper might anticipate, he sliced horizontally around the base of the woods to pop out on the far side of the bulge. It was slow going, his boots sinking into the snow, but he managed to hold a steady pace. When he reached a ravine, he held several paces back from the last row of trees. Keeping to the shadows, he scanned the mountainside through the AR-10's scope. Greens and browns streaked together, and then he scanned past a spot of flesh. He rotated the scope back. Sure enough, the sniper was taking a position higher on the bulge, angling down onto the patch of pines directly up from where he'd last spotted Evan. The sniper crawled over an outcrop, at one point rising to full height. The average man is 1 meter from crown to crotch, a useful measurement for optically determining distance to target. To gauge the sniper's position, Evan fitted him between the horizontal lines of the stadia, 500 meters out. The man pushed on upslope, diminishing another notch, 525. Evan consulted the range card taped to the buttstock. The laminated square of paper noted the specific ballistics for the handload of the rifle, how much the bullet dropped per 100 yards, range solutions, the exterior trajectory of the projectile. Bracing the rifle on a flat patch of shale, he dialed an elevation into the scope to correct the aim for the ballistic arc at 525 meters. When he focused again, the sniper was gone. Closing his right eye, Evan pressed his left to the rubber cup and sighted on a thicket of trees next to the outcrop. Nothing. The guy had vanished. A whippoorwill called from the treetops, the agitated warble scoring Evan's mounting uneasiness. He'd set up for an ambush, not a firefight. Under close scrutiny, he'd be visible through the patchwork of branches and leaves. But if he repositioned now, his movement could draw the sniper's eye. The sniper had been focused eastward. He had no reason to search in Evan's direction. Unless something else had grabbed his focus. Something that had made him seek cover from anyone along the very sightline on which Evan had situated himself. Very slowly, Evan shifted from his belly onto his side and peered down through the woods to the valley floor. Way below, a few slivers of the chalet were visible between the trunks. Something darted across one of the slim gaps, trailing blonde hair. Candy McClure. A moment later there was a second flash, lower to the ground. The orphans had drawn the sniper's attention. The shooter had reoriented to face this way, which meant that he was facing Evan. Evan's stomach clenched. Rolling back into position, he placed his eye on the scope in time to see a muzzle flare between two of the tree trunks in the thicket. An instant later, the shale at his side kicked up, rocks embedding in the trunks behind him forcefully enough to sway the tips of the pines overhead. 12 inches to the left, and he'd be missing an arm. He had to squeeze off a shot fast before the sniper got off a second round. Evan zeroed in on the afterglow of that muzzle flare in the shadows of the thicket. He aimed a hair to the right on the assumption that the sniper was right-handed and lying on the left side of the rifle. He pulled the trigger. He never saw the impact, but a pink haze drifted out from the darkness between the trunks. Evan hopped to his feet and charged upslope. The shots had announced his presence to Candy and M, and worse, to the North Sniper, who had proved himself to be a serious shooter. Evan had to get to the South Sniper's rifle if he hoped to go head-to-head with him. He figured the North Sniper was already on the move, circling the rim of the valley, crashing through the woods to get within range, and Candy and M were no doubt moving up the mountain at him from below. Driving up the incline, Evan pistoned between rocks, skimmed through trees, ignoring the pain that was firing the muscles of his legs. His bobbing torso felt exposed, hung out like a paper target. Wind whipped his ears, a whoosh to match the adrenaline surge in his veins. Every step seemed to take an eternity. And yet, he hadn't drawn fire. The outcrop loomed ahead. For a time it seemed his legs were churning uselessly, bringing him no closer. At last the stone came within reach. Bracing for a bullet to the back, he hurled himself over the stone, rolling into the thicket of pines. He expected hard ground, but landed on something soft and yielding. The body of the South sniper. Evan's shot had squarely hit the mark. It occurred to him that he'd never seen the sniper's face, and never would. He rolled the body away from the big gun. A Sako TRG-42 in .338 Lapua mag, a professional-grade platform, still set up for a shot. Evan swung into place next to it. The crosshairs perfectly marked the spot on the shale where he'd been moments before. Tilting the gun downslope, he scanned across the treetops. Flickering in and out of cover, Candy charged up the mountain, Orphan M at her heels. They'd harvested AKs from the ballroom bloodbath. Two quick shots, and it would be down to Evan and the North Sniper, squaring off in the snowy bowl of the valley. Snugging his cheek to the stock, Evan led Candy slightly, the crosshairs marking the air inches in front of her face. She vanished behind a dense copse of pines, but he kept the rifle on its trajectory, timing her progress, waiting for a break in the trees. It came, and he was ready for it. Candy reared into the scope. His finger tightened on the trigger. The crosshairs found their mark. An instant before he could fire, the air exploded around him. He heard the meaty smack beneath his ear, felt a wrecking ball strike his shoulder, and then all he saw were pine needles and branches blurring by. The earth rushed up to greet him, dirt in his mouth, splinters in his cheek, ice in his ear, and his own blood puddling on the ground beneath him. 56. Mostly certain. He was alive. Of that he was mostly certain. His body was shocked into paralysis, but he could move his eyes. He strained them, trying to piece together what had happened. If he'd taken a .30 cal to the shoulder, he'd be dead or missing the limb. His hand lay in view in front of his eyes. He believed it was still attached to his body. The fingers were smooth and pale, slightly curled. Concentrating with everything he had, he made them twitch. Okay, then. Still attached. His pupils moved to the lapua and then to the tree beside it. A football-sized bite had been taken clean out of the trunk, the raw inner wood exposed. Bits of bark swirled in the air, ignoring gravity. The North Sniper had missed him by inches, the round sending a hunk of tree shrapnel smashing through Evan's shoulder. Evan realized, almost secondarily, that he wasn't breathing. His throat felt snarled. The airway knotted. His stomach lurched a few times as if in anticipation of puking, and then his rib cage released and he drew in oxygen, a primordial sucking sound as though someone had punched holes straight through his lungs. For a time, he gasped into the pine needles. Blood spread out beneath him, sticky on his neck. The warmth reached his cheek. If he didn't stanch the bleeding, and fast, then this off-kilter view of the forest floor would be his final screen grab before he powered down. Somehow he sat up, though he might have blacked out once or twice doing it. He found himself gaping down at his torn coat and the ball of his right shoulder, a scramble of pink flesh and shredded muscle. Shards of his clavicle glittered in the wreckage. Bright blood pumped through the wound at intervals, pushing rivulets down his arm and into the matted fabric. When the collarbone shattered, it must have lacerated the subclavian vein, causing a massive hemorrhage. The damage was too close to his neck to tourniquet. A wave of lightheadedness passed through him, bringing with it the image of arterial blood soaking the shoulder of the blue flannel. Jack's hand, already wearing a glove of crimson, clamps the wound. Evan blinked his way back to the present, lifted his left hand, and clamped it over the wound. He forced breath into his lungs, tried to wrestle his thoughts into place through the swamp of sensations engulfing him. He'd been trained for this, to strategize under extreme stress and pain, to shield the pilot light and keep it from being snuffed out. Candy and Orphan M were still a good ways downslope with plenty of steep terrain to make up. Since he held high ground, they'd have to move slowly, cautiously. But the North Sniper could be anywhere, and he knew precisely where Evan was. "Draw back from the tree line." He'd spoken the command, it seemed, rather than thinking it. It was the only way he could make his limbs move. He scuttled backward, shoving with his heels, before realizing he wasn't standing up. Rising without using his arms was difficult, but he managed. He withdrew into the thicket, nearly tripping over his boots. Both rifles were back in the clearing along with the AK, but he couldn't possibly operate them anyway. Blood snaked down his right arm, dripped from his fingertips. The pain tasted of wet concrete, the humid air of parking level 3 pressing into his pores, the elevator lights casting a red glow, and he fastened his left hand tighter over the wound, breathing the all-too-familiar tang of iron, the sickly sweet trace of cherry blossom, which he swore he smelled. But he knew he was here in a snow-layered valley in Maine, stumbling up slope and trying to tamp the blood back into his body. He wondered if it was possible to be in two places at once. Maybe that was what dying was, pulling up the net of time, events and places jumbling together, and Jack is clutching his bloody shoulder, as Evan was clutching his, and Jack says, "I'm already dead. It caught the brachial." "You don't know that. You don't..." "I know that." He lifts a calloused hand, lays it against Evan's cheek. Perhaps for the first time ever. Evan tripped, his knee plowing into a drift. He wobbled for a moment, leaning into the rise. The spill, so bright against the snow, a robin's red, red breast. Shoving himself vertical again took several phases. His feet moved, somehow carrying him onward, upward. He pinballed off trees. They proliferated, an endless span of trunks splitting the earth like the bars of a cell. At last he sensed an openness ahead, the woods giving over to a bare patch of blinding white. Through the last trees ahead, a stretch of uneven powder swept up to the summit 15 or so meters above. He had to make it. The snow sucked at his boots. He yanked them free, fighting for balance. He would not go down. His teeth chattered. He couldn't feel his arm. It occurred to him that he was going to die. And yet all he could see was the paroxysm of pain racking Jack's body. Jack fights out the words. "Listen to me. This is not your fault. I made the decision to meet you. I did. Go. Leave me. Go!" Evan thinks he is choking, but then he feels the wet on his cheeks and realizes what is happening to his face. "No," he says. "I won't go. I won't." Jack's good hand drops to his belt, and there is a clank, and then his service pistol is up between them. He aims it at Evan. "Go." "You wouldn't." Jack's gaze is steady, focused. "Have I ever lied to you?" Evan stands up, stumbles back a step. It dawns on him that Jack's flannel shirt is still mopped around his hand. His fist tightens around it, moisture spreading between his fingers. Somewhere above them in the structure, tires screech, boots pound concrete. "Son," Jack says gently, "it's time to go." He rotates the barrel beneath his own chin. Backing up, Evan arms the tears from his face. He takes another step back, and another, and then finally he turns. Running away, he hears the gunshot. Jack's words echo in his head. It's time to go. It's time to go. God damn it, Evan said. Damn it. Damn it. Stupid fucking way to die. The blood-crusted fingers of his left hand had gone numb, making it harder to hold the seal on the slick flesh of his shoulder. He lost his center of gravity, tilting into a soft white bank. He tried to right himself, but the snow gave way beneath his weight, delivering him gently to the ground. His hand was too weak to hold back the blood anymore. The warm current trickled through his fingers. He breathed into the cold earth, blinked ice crystals off his eyelashes. Since Jack, he had let no one into his life, and so there would be no one to miss him. Stupid, he said. He felt himself fading away, the nowhere man blurring into the whiteness, a lifetime spent blending in, leaving no traces, which also meant leaving no mark. He'd built his armor ring by ring, but now he felt himself crushed under the weight of it, sinking into oblivion. So this was how it would end? The proverbial whimper? His entire body was shuddering. A more intense vibration near his hip differentiated itself, and it took him a moment to identify it. The Rome Zone. The kid. The ringing phone called his thoughts to Allison Siegler as well. It occurred to him that when he died, instead of the customary tunnel of light, he was going to see the Horizon Express steaming relentlessly for the Jacksonville Port Authority. Evan squeezed his eyes shut. Son, it's time to go. He released his shoulder, the blood flowing freely now, and dug for the phone in his pocket. He lifted the battered Rome Zone to his face, his hand a uniform crimson, his knuckles tacky against his cheek. He thought of how he usually answered the phone, "Do you need my help?" and wanted to laugh. He said, I can't. The boy's voice, hushed and fierce. You forgot. No, I didn't. I just can't. A wave of pain swept away Evan's breath. He grimaced, bit his lip, waited for it to pass. I can't help you, okay? Can't help you. The ground tilted around him. A roller coaster looped through space and time, and he was talking to the kid and to Allison Siegler, to Jack on the floor of parking level 3, and to himself, trapped hopelessly in a valley 15 meters from the summit. I can't help any of you anymore. It's time to go. Every breath brought pain. Evan said, there'll be someone else. No. The boy's words faded in and out of static. It has to be you. Evan felt himself seeping into the cold ground. Some long-buried part inside him split open, a flood of emotion sweeping him down, down, plunging him into deep, freezing waters. A tear cut through the snowflakes, crusting his cheek, a single warm track across his skin, and a straw-thin spray squirts between Jack's fingers. He was crying, but felt something instead of sadness. Something like liberation. Time to go. Sorry, he said. I'm sorry. The phone died. Evan tilted it to see the screen, his hand trembling violently. No bars left. Sorry, he told the ground. I'm sorry. Go. Leave me. Go. Okay, Jack, he said. Okay. He breathed wetly for a moment, stared between the last tree trunks at that bare patch of earth just within reach ahead. The setting sun caught the rise of powder in all its creamy glory. 15 meters to the peak. He deserved at least that. I want to make it, he told himself hoarsely. I want to see the top. He shoved the phone into his jacket pocket. This piece of the kid he would not let go of, and placed his hand back over his shoulder. His grip was still loose, so he used his chin to pin his hand more tightly over the wound. Somehow, he wiggled to his knees. Leaning into a pine, he found his feet. His first step broke him through the tree line. The sudden openness made his breath catch. The pain ebbed, draining out of him. As he forged up the unmarred blanket of white, the world came into vivid focus. The saw-toothed edges of snowflakes, the violet spill of the sunset through puffy clouds. The air, so fresh it stung his throat, telling him that right now, in this moment, he was still alive. A golden glow limned the mountaintop. His last steps would carry him there. At once the horizon seemed to bubble up in one spot, the bulge taking shape as a human form. Someone coming over the peak from the far side. The figure stood atop the crest, backlit. Evan squinted into the light, noted the silhouette of the rifle held across the man's chest. A .338 Lapua mag.
The North Sniper. You deserve it,
Evan told him, though the words didn't make it out.
You were better.
He could no longer feel his legs. Now that he'd halted, he wouldn't be able to start up again. He stared wistfully at the apex, just a few strides away. His blistered lips moved.
At least I tried, he said.
The sniper's features were cloaked in black. He raised the rifle. Evan felt a deep thrumming in his bones, and the blissful release of having no options left.
He could stop fighting.
The scope glinted in the day's dying light, and Evan sensed the crack of a shot. He pitched forward, holding his eyes on the brim of the valley. He wanted his last view to be of the summit. The thrumming turned to thunder, the beating of giant wings. The sniper was jerking around as if yanked by strings, laced through with bullets. A strange calm descended over Evan as he grasped what this was. A dying fantasy played out in his mind's eye. Well, then he might as well enjoy it. The thunder took on a rhythm, the whomping of some great beast. And then a black hawk broke majestically over the wall of the valley, sunlight gleaming off the blades. A door gunner leaned out over the skid, peering down over a machine gun, assessing his work. Jack.
Of course. What better than Jack Jones as Evan's archangel, and a black hawk to bear him into the sweet hereafter?
The machine gun unleashed overhead, raising the pines behind Evan, and he understood that imaginary Jack was protecting him, driving Candy McClure and Orphan M back into the woods, pushing them down slope and away. Evan was safe now. He was beyond harm. The helo sent down, the rotor wash ruffling Evan's hair, his clothes. He smiled into the fever dream. Jack hopped down and tromped over to Evan, the sun winking into sight behind his head. He'd aged. He'd be in his 70s by now, but looked a hale 60. Evan knew that he was beyond a dying fantasy, that he was dead and gone, riding the last random neuron firings through his expired brain. Two more men leapt from the Black Hawk and jogged over, a stretcher bouncing between them. Jack shouted over his shoulder, "Get him out of here!" The men sped up, wading through the snow. Jack set his hands on his knees and grimaced down at Evan. "What are you doing lying there?"
"Dying."
Jack's face warred between concern and anger. "You gave that asshole a wide-open shot. Where's your gun?"
"Back in woods. Couldn't fire anymore. Right arm. No good."
Jack's square head snapped down, assessing Evan. "Nothing wrong with the left one," he said. Evan peered up at the brilliant violet sky, grinning.
Jack. That was Jack.
The medics finally arrived, pulled Jack aside, and swept Evan up. They jostled him back toward the Black Hawk on the stretcher, Jack jogging alongside them. Evan caught an upward view of Jack and could see that concern was winning out now. As they loaded Evan into the chopper, the Roamzone fell out of Evan's coat pocket. He twisted and grabbed for it, crying out, but the noise of the rotors swept away his words.
"What?"
Jack shouted.
"What's wrong?"
They slid Evan into the belly of the Black Hawk. He kicked and reached. Jack followed him in, the shattered phone in his hand.
"This? You want this?"
Evan nodded. Jack looked from the busted casing and shattered screen to Evan, his forehead furrowed.
"Okay."
Evan grabbed the phone, squeezed it tight. A needle pricked his arm. His stomach swooned as they lifted up. The cold, cold air breezed through the open door. Jack was shouting into a headset.
"Blood units ready. Throw the saline in the freezer and get a trauma surgeon there. Now!"
They banked high above the valley, and Evan peered down at the dollhouse of the chalet, spirals of smoke still rising from the blown-out wall.
"Jack, I don't care how hard it is. You don't get me someone in time, I will land this helo on your skull. Understand?"
Movement below caught Evan's eye. A caravan of black SUVs blazed up the gravel road, sweeping onto the cobblestone driveway, doors flying open, men spilling out. Breaking from the tree line, two dots sprinted to meet them. Evan felt himself going out, and he blinked hard, fighting to stay conscious. A figure broke from the pack of men, waiting to receive Candy McClure and Orphan M. The man was dressed differently from the others, wearing some kind of cloak. He paused, turning skyward to glare at the Black Hawk as it hung overhead. His hood was raised, his face shadowed, but Evan knew right away who it was. Van Sciver. The Black Hawk banked again, the view swept away, replaced by the endless scroll of the sky. Evan shut his eyes, and this time, they didn't open. 57. A very persuasive call.
Pain. Horizontal. Drifting along as if in a canoe.
Evan's throat. Sandpaper and rust. His hand cramped around the Roamzone.
Needle jammed in his arm, saline bag clutched in Jack's blocky fist.
Fluorescent lights floated overhead. An empty corridor led to another empty corridor.
Doors. A warehouse interior.
Arranged in the middle of the blank space, lit like a movie set. A full operating theater.
Bizarre.
As out of place as Renee's basement lab.
The afterlife was weird.
A doctor in blue scrubs ran over.
"Who is he?"
Jack's disembodied voice, gruffer than usual.
"John Doe."
"Who are you?"
"John Doe Sr."
Thumb on eyelid, flare of penlight, latex fingers on the side of his neck. A nurse called over,
"Can someone please tell me what the saline is doing in the freezer?"
Jack waved her off, trauma shears zippering open the coat, fabric peeling wetly back from Evan's wound.
"Jesus,"
the doctor said.
Jack, speak.
"Look, I got a very persuasive call from the 202 area code telling me to get to this location. I want to help, believe me. But I'm an anesthesiologist."
"An anesthesiologist? For the love of Mary."
"He needs a vein graft into the damaged subclavial vein. That requires a trauma surgeon."
"I asked for a trauma surgeon."
"Guess how many of those there are in Piscataquis County. Your guys, they finally tracked one down, but... the weather... the roads... she's still 2 hours out. I'm just a placeholder till she gets here. But get the words to come out faster. Look, I'm sorry. He's not gonna make it that long. He's not gonna make it.
Jack's face bunched up. Evan tried to make a noise, but nothing happened. The lights wobbled in and out. Okay. Jack tilted his forehead into the span of his palm. When he looked up, his eyes were different. Kill him, Jack said. 58. Cold. Cold. 59. Reborn. Lights fuzzed into existence. Cabin. Soft bed. Jack sitting bedside. You have been, Jack said theatrically, reborn.
You look old, Evan said, and drifted into the beckoning darkness.
60. The only person worse than us. Fade in on a new day. Evan's shoulder pulsed beneath the bandages. Jack remained in that bedside chair. Same clothes, more scruff. The cabin smelled of wet cedar and coffee. Seemed like a sorry-ass excuse for the Elysian Fields. Was it real? Quit whining and get your ass up, Jack said. We got work to do.
Yeah,
Evan thought. It's real.
What's... date?
Evan's throat clutched, sending him into a coughing fit. Jack said, October 27th. 3 days. That gave Evan 3 days to get to Allison Siegler before she got to Jacksonville. He was still coughing. Jack handed him a glass of water. Evan took a sip, felt the coolness glide all the way down his parched throat into his stomach. The cabin was one big room. Worn leather books lined a bookshelf, ordered by descending height. A water-filled heavy bag hung from one of the ceiling beams. A kettle perched on a stovetop, centered on the heating coil. Not a crumb, not a speck of dust in sight. Jack lived here, all right. Evan set the glass down. Grimacing, he reached out with his left hand and poked Jack's chest. Solid.
You're supposed to be dead, he said.
Later, Jack said.
I thought it was a dying vision. A deus ex machina in the form of a Black Hawk.
My trusted mentor at the helm. Evan had put more bite into trusted mentor than he'd intended. We wouldn't have seen you if you hadn't broken out onto that open patch of the mountain.
How'd you get my vicinity?
We got there after the explosion at the chalet, did a sweep below the outside brink of the valley. We were scanning the mountainsides with a parabolic mic. Picked up the audio signature of your murmuring.
You were...
what?
You were apologizing. Sorry. I'm sorry. The boy had saved Evan's life then. Not vice versa. Evan would repay the favor soon enough. If the kid hadn't called, if Evan hadn't answered, Jack's crew wouldn't have zeroed in on him. If he hadn't broken tree cover to stagger for the summit, he wouldn't have been spotted. The last ounce of what he had to give was the ounce that had saved his life.
A burning intensified on Evan's leg. He flipped back the sheets. A red scar seamed the inside of his calf. They'd harvested a saphenous vein?
He said, "How am I?"
We took you offline, Jack said. Suspended animation. Evan waited. The doc induced hypothermia. Drained your blood. Flushed your system with cold saline.
My veins?
Internal organs, heart, brain. Everything. We took you down to 50 degrees. The colder the cells are, the less oxygen they need. We had to slow down your chemical reactions, keep your brain from realizing it wasn't getting any oxygen.
You making this up?
Nah. They've been playing with it behind the fence for years now. They call it emergency preservation and resuscitation.
It's been tested?
On pigs. At this, Jack allowed a gleam of amusement to cross his eyes.
Survivability rate?
7%. Evan swallowed. Oh, come on, Jack said. Best odds you've had your whole damn life. He looked away quickly, but not before Evan saw his blue eyes moisten. You were dead for 2 hours and 13 minutes. The trauma surgeon finally showed up.
What did she do?
After taking my head off? She performed the graft. Then we packed you in hot water bladders to bring you back to body temperature, rapid infused you with warmed blood products, kick-started you with a defib. You're Frankenstein's monster. The fallen angel.
Where's my phone?
Jack looked concerned at that. He must have read the emotion on Evan's face. Sliding open the nightstand drawer, he pulled out the beat-up Rome Zone and tossed it onto the sheets. You okay?
Do I fucking look okay, Jack?
I know we have a lot to talk about. You think? Jack glanced away, his jaw shifting.
I can't believe it's Thursday.
Evan tried to sit up, with mixed results. His vision spotted, and then the spots bled together. He lay back down.
I've never been out 4 days.
You've never been dead before.
Right.
Unlike you. Snowflakes plastered the window.
Where am I?
Alleghenies.
Am I free to leave?
What? Color came up beneath Jack's cheeks. Of course you're free to leave. What do you think this is?
I don't know.
What is this? This is me saving your ass.
Well, you haven't exactly been forthcoming these past 8 years. So forgive me if the issue of trust is in question.
Jack let that one ring off the walls for a moment. He templed his fingers, looked down at them. I have a fake driver's license for you. Cash, all that. You're free to leave as soon as you're rested up. I'll take you wherever you want to go.
Where's the nearest road?
4.3 clicks down slope. He rasped a hand across his chin.
You gonna hitchhike out of here, Evan? In the shape you're in?
That'd show me, all right. Evan bit his lip hard, let his thoughts boil. His head throbbed, but he pretended he didn't notice.
How'd you get onto me? He finally asked.
I didn't. Van Sciver locked on after the money wire. I keep an eye on Van Sciver. Once word went out wide on the auction.
You're watching him?
Mostly unsuccessfully. For years now. As he tries to watch me. Shadow games.
You're not sanctioned.
Nope. I'm as dead and gone as you are. That half smirk. But I've still got friends in low places.
Have you seen Van Sciver face to face?
No. This is the closest we've come. Jack reached into the drawer, came out with a time-stamped satellite image zoomed in on the chalet. Evan stared at it incredulously.
You still have access to birds?
Depends who you ask. The grainy photo captured Van Sciver's face pointed up at the sky, nothing more than a dark oval beneath the raised hood of the cloak. The precise moment Evan remembered before blacking out. SUVs spotted the driveway around Van Sciver, a frenzy of beetles. Evan stared at the blurry form.
The hell's he wearing?
A Faraday cage cloak. The metallized fabric blocks RF signals, X-rays, thermal imaging, even blocks him from drones.
He looks like Gandalf.
You know how he is. trinkets and paranoia. They're like catnip to him. He's the only person worse than us.
Evan's head suddenly felt quite heavy. You're supposed to be dead.
Later, Evan. Evan was too weak to argue.
What did you get on Renee?
Renee? The guy who took me. Who held the auction. Everyone dispersed after your rescue. It was an escape. Jack showed his palms. Okay. After your escape, they didn't find much at the chalet. Auto-erase features were remote-initiated on the hard drives, so all those surveillance cams, they proved worthless.
How are you getting this intel if you're off the grid?
3 decades in the Shadow Service. I still got plenty of baited lines on the inside.
Evan shifted on the bed, and his right shoulder let him know about it. What about the stuff he left behind? There was a lot of shit in that chalet.
I talked to one of my hooks at the Bureau. The investigation is young, but he said everything in that chalet was pretty well end-stopped. Rare paintings, weird medical crap, advanced weaponry. There's plenty to run down, but it'll take time. Black market, dubious provenance, cash payments, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure something'll yield. But you know how it is backtracking through the black markets. Like digging a hole with your face.
Evan pictured Renee waving around that clear cylindrical bottle, misting the DNA privacy spray over every surface he touched. The empty drawers in the study. What is mine is hidden away down a rabbit hole. How'd he pay for the place?
Evan asked. The money trail looks like a spider web. Ball bearings.
Within ball bearings, Evan said with him. Jack seemed amused. Evan was not. His neck was having trouble supporting his head.
Every payment wired in from a different shell corp, Jack said. He's got elaborate encryptions for movement between entities.
Ben Skyver cracked his encryption. The words came drowsily. Evan wondered what kinds of painkillers were in his system. There were too many questions spinning through his head for him to grab hold of. 3 days to get to Allison Siegler. Right now the Horizon Express would be dog-legging around the eastern tip of Cuba, turning back for the mainland. And God only knew where the boy was.
Jack spoke, pulling Evan from his thoughts. With the resources Van Skyver has at his disposal, he can crack anything.
Not anything, Evan said. He got through Renee's wire encryptions. But never mind.
The point is, this whack job Renee, the guy's Teflon. Jack shook his head. We have no idea who he is. He's a ghost.
Evan moved his right arm, felt the muscle scream.
Don't, Jack said. What are you doing?
Evan's fingertips found the tape plastered to the inside of his left arm. Weakly, he peeled it free. His skin tugged up, 1,000 tiny pinches. He held the length of tape to the light. Trapped inside, Renee's fingerprint. Jack peeled it from the pad of Evan's thumb. At last, Evan let his head tilt back onto the pillow. It felt like drifting into a cloud.
You're welcome, he mumbled, and fell asleep.
61. To do harm. Evan woke up sometime in the night. Darkness crowded the windows, making the cabin feel small and inconsequential, a box drifting through outer space. At the square of the kitchen table, Jack slumped in a chair, breathing heavily, his sleeping face uplit with the dancing glow of a screensaver. As quietly as he could, Evan slipped from the sheets. His shoulder ached with each movement, but the pain was surprisingly manageable. He walked silently across the floorboards. His muscles felt tight, his lower back complaining about the bedridden hours. Easing into the bathroom, he tugged the pull chain light. His unshaven face glowered back at him from the mirror. he'd seen more attractive sights. It took some doing to reach the string at the back of the hospital gown, but he managed, letting the fabric rustle forward off his arms and puddle on the floor. Biting his lip, he loosed the adhesive dressing taped across his shoulder, letting it hinge open. A gnarled patch of flesh capped the deltoid. A horizontal scar ran above the clavicle, an accent mark mohawked with sutures. The bone looked passable, probably restraightened with the help of a metal rod. His vision spotted, and he leaned against the sink to regain his balance. Another week or so, and he'd be well enough to leave. But he didn't have a week. He had to get to the boy, as promised. To Allison Siegler. And then to Renee. Evan's hair was knotted, gummed with sap. His face had been wiped clean, but streaks of dried blood still marked the side of his neck, the edge of his temple. He smelled of sweat and dirt. Lowering himself into the empty tub, he let the water trickle warm. A fresh razor rested on the cake of soap. He shaved carefully in the semi-darkness, then used a washcloth to bathe himself. The lather filled the tiny bathroom with familiar scents. Bergamot and saddle soap, lemon and musk. The smell of Jack. It brought Evan back to the two-story farmhouse of his childhood, his dormer bedroom looking across a blanket of oak trees. Strider, their Rhodesian ridgeback, lapping table scraps from Evan's 12-year-old hand beneath the table. The hard part is keeping you human. Jack's foot ticking along to La Fille du Régiment. 9 high seas, towering bookshelves and mallard green walls. Photograph of Jack's long-dead wife in its tarnished silver frame. Parking level 3, blue flannel, the tang of iron and cherry blossoms. Have I ever lied to you? Have I ever lied to you? Yes. You have. Evan shut off the faucet. With effort, he hoisted himself up, stepped free of the bathtub, and managed to towel himself mostly dry. Leaving the dirty hospital gown, he exited the bathroom, crept across the room, and sat on the bed. The cabinet of the nightstand held medical supplies. He spread them on the sheets, tugged out a fresh square of gauze, and tore the package with his teeth. The medical tape gave him trouble. Behind him at the table, Jack was awake. Evan didn't know how he knew. He just did. Jack's voice ghosted over his shoulder. Can I help you? No, Evan said. Evan awakened the next morning to an empty cabin. He felt less groggy. After dressing in some of Jack's clothes that he found in the closet, he went over to the stretch of counter that passed for a kitchen and made himself oatmeal. He was still stirring the bowl when Jack stepped in from outside, snapping down the stubby antenna of a sat phone. Renee Peter Casseroy, Jack said. That's quite a name. Jack flicked his head at a stack of printouts on the kitchen table. He's got quite a lineage. He ducked out of his scarf, slung it on the coat rack. He's in the wind. Evan crossed to the table, flipped through the reports, all of them stamped, classified. Most were from the FBI, which looked to be running point on the investigation. Evan suspected that the IRS docs would prove most valuable. A few scanned crime scene photos had been printed out as well. The barn, the basement lab, the erupted ballroom. It seemed from another lifetime. The fingerprint cracked things open, sped up the investigation. The Bureau is piecing together a RICO case on top of murder, kidnapping, the usual suspects. Casseroy paid top dollar to rent gunmen from the Sinaloa cartel, as you know. A few young men and women have gone missing from the neighboring counties, and there are some bizarre assault claims floating around as well. The agents found similar groupings of disappearances and complaints near the last several mansions Casseroy rented. Albuquerque, Cabo San Lucas, Brussels. Jack tugged off his jacket, heaped it atop the rack. They've got meticulously maintained financial and medical files for the victims, helicopter flight logs, and a dead, disreputable hematologist.